Good morning, everybody. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and we're already past the middle of July. Goodness me. I just opened the farm workshop up, and at the end of the workshop is where the bantams sleep. Three girls and one very young boy who's just decided that he can crow. But he's sitting there because it's quite gloomy at the moment, but normally about 4 in the morning he starts his crowing. He's kind of ruling the roost, I suppose you could say, and he's bossing these poor three girls around like this in a very inappropriate way. But if I just walk out of the way a little bit, he might do one of his early morning wake-up calls, and it is, despite his size, very, very loud indeed. Don't know, I'm just standing watching him now. Come on. Fancy having that outside your bedroom window. Well, fortunately, I can't hear him, and nobody else can either. That's such a lovely sort of evocative sound of my childhood when there were lots of chickens wandering around the farmyard. Dairy cows mooing at this time of the morning. 4 o'clock, they're getting them in off the summer meadows where they spent the night outside eating the grass, and milking time would be just after 4 a.m. in the morning. And then there would be pigs here as well, and the young weaners, about 8 to 10 weeks old, were free range, particularly in the autumn. They'd go racing across the meadows under the oak trees and fatten up on the acorns. And that's how it was in the 1950s when I was a child. Now, I think that rooster's, what's he doing? Oh, they're all preening at the moment. I can just see them down at the end there. Anyway, Matthew Gudgeon will be along with me later on today, and we'll be looking at, well, all the exciting things. And I've had a whole host of questions. The office computer was purring away yesterday, spewing out one question after another, and I've had a quick look at some of them. And this week we got some fantastic questions, and one of them's on some of the balsam plants here at the farm as well. So we'll be visiting one of the wet areas on High Ash. I promise not to take Matthew Gudgeon to the bog anymore. It's a little bit hair-raising down there. But we'll be by one of the streams at the farm and answer as many of the questions as we can. Right, I'm just hopping off into the truck now. The sky's just beginning to get light now. All the security lighting still on around the farmyard, and that will be turning off automatically quite shortly. The swallows are singing in the barn, nearly all of them on second broods now, so they've been busy. The weather's turned a little bit warmer, and we've got a few showers forecast later today. Still 2/3 of the hay to cut, so we're waiting for 5 dry days in succession so that we can get the rest of it into the barn for the horses here over the winter months. Right, I'm just going to start the truck, head down to one of the areas of woodland, because each of the three large areas of woodland here at the farm have young buzzards in them, and they're scooching from one tree to another. So I'm going to see if I can record, not that rooster, I'm going to see if I can record some of the young buzzards with their very high-pitched call. Mum, Dad, I'm hungry. Mum, Dad, I'm still hungry. And that's how it is. Nature at High Ash Farm. Oh, good. Rat's in the truck, waiting patiently. Good boy, Rat. You ready?
deep into the woods with the sun just dappling through the undergrowth here. Needless to say, Chris, and we're going to talk about trees?
Yes, just briefly. We had a really interesting question last week. It was from Susan Rudling, and asking about the oldest tree on the farm, which sadly met its demise about 2 to 3 years ago. It was the Caister oak.
Not many yards from here, actually.
No, that's right. Very close. And it was over 600 years old. And it might surprise people because there are other species, although the one we're standing near is an introduced species, probably been here since Roman times, is the sweet chestnut. And it can match, or almost match, oak for longevity. And this, the only way to describe it, is a massive tree. And it's just over 30 metres tall, which takes it to over 100 feet.
Ramrod straight.
Yes, a huge trunk, a huge bole, we call it, right up into the canopy. And it's, although we're standing under it at the minute, it's in full flower because it's unusual. Sweet chestnut, Castanea sativa. And it's interesting to know that the Roman people who occupied the west side of Hiersham, the Romans, came to Caister in AD 43, and they named Caister Castra, and it's almost the Roman town village that's named after sweet chestnut trees. And the Romans, we think, actually introduced chestnuts all over Europe, from Asia Minor and Yugoslavia and Greece, where its home is, and it will grow in our country quite well. You don't see quite so many of them in the northern part of the UK, but here there's no chalk just underneath where we're standing, and it suits the chestnuts. And we're surrounded by massive trees. Another one there, look, also over 30 metres tall. Another one there that's lost a big limb.
I know they're not strictly native, but we'd miss them, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely. And because we're losing so many of our native trees for various diseases, obviously through the first part of my farming career, elm disease, which is absolutely tragic. It killed over 1,500 trees here at the farm. Now we've got ash dieback, and of course it's high ash farm. Ash dieback was discovered not in the UK, not very far from here, Ashwell Thorpe, and it's spread really all over the UK now. I visited Alderney a few years back and found it there. I was doing some talks for the Alderney Wildlife Trust, and so that's sort of decimating the ash population right across the UK. But this must be one of the largest chestnuts on high ash, and I brought a tape measure with me. Here we are. And what we're going to do, you measure the girth of a tree around about 5 feet above ground level. Well, I'm 5'8", which takes us to there, so we're going to put tape measure around about there, but it's too big, so you've kind of got to go for a walk around the tree. I'll give you one end of the tape measure.
Right, here
and
I go.
And round we go.
Right, I'm going round clockwise.
Yep.
Oh, there we are. And, oh my word, this is huge. Just go all the way round, and I've met Chris the other side.
There we go. What have we got? We have 15 feet, almost exactly. Just 4 inches short.
175 odd inches.
Yes, yep. Yeah, wow. So that takes it to probably close to 350 years old. And when you stand under it, you're just in awe because there are tons and tons and tons of timber there. Beautiful trees. And this one's unusual because normally with sweet chestnuts, the bark kind of twists in a spiral as it grows. And although it's a really useful wood and it can be used for fence posts and chestnut pale fencing, got lots of uses, it suffers from a condition called the shakes. I'm beginning to get that. So when you extract beams from it, they can split open, and it's really unfortunate how it happens. Each year's growth actually splits separate from the next one, and so you have all these little fissures in the wood, and that makes it pretty well unusable for really large-scale timber. But all around us are chestnut trees. That one's been pollarded. You can see there's two coming off the base of the stump. And some through there have three or four. And they're all giants in amongst, all up over the 30 metre mark. And so wonderful trees. Although, as I said, they're introduced species. We have fallen in love with them. I think the biggest one in the UK was at Canford School in Dorset, and that dwarfs this one. It's 28 feet, 4 inches round the trunk.
Double.
So, double, yes. So absolutely amazing girth. That's the largest girth, if it's still standing, of any tree in the UK. So chestnut sort of top trumps oak in that respect. But really lovely to have them here. All these were planted, not by the Romans, they're not old enough, but for all the timber that they provided, the farm was self-sufficient and could sort of mill its own timber for fencing in particular.
And as a byproduct, the chestnuts that these produce are great for the deer and all the different wildlife, yes. And the badgers nearby.
Yes, there's a badger set not far from where we are. It's in flower at the moment. As I said, it's one of the last trees to come into flower. You have these long catkins, 6-7 inches long, with lots and lots of pollen on. And the pollen sort of fills this area of woodland, particularly early in the morning, with a lovely kind of aromatic scent. It's almost musk-like, the scent. And at the end of all the little twigs where the catkins are on, you have these tiny little hedgehogs, miniature ones. And so when insects are sort of gathering the pollen from the sweet chestnut tree, it's insect pollinated as well as wind pollinated. And you'll see lots of insects flying about up there in the canopy. And so what happens is then, once those little cupules, they're called, are fertilised, then they start to grow really quickly. So from now, sort of after the middle of July already, right through to early September, those little chestnuts, three in each little hedgehog case, grow up. They're usually flattened on one side where they're pressed against their mate inside the little things. Then they open up and either the whole hedgehog drops onto the woodland floor, and the badgers absolutely love it, and so do the deer, and of course so did humans years ago. It was a major part of the diet, particularly for the Romans. So we have found at High Ash Farm, in the Roman excavations that we've done recently, we've found fragments of charcoal, which was from chestnuts, just to prove that the Romans actually used the wood as well as the food source. And isn't it strange, all these chestnuts beside us have got the lovely straight bark, and I was going to try and show you one with the corkscrew effect, and it's almost useless as timber at that point. But nevertheless, beautiful, beautiful trees. Big straight bowl on this one, right up to the dome at the top. And I don't know quite how they managed to produce all those chestnuts in the few weeks that they have less. Bear in mind their home, they love growing in Greece and the hotter countries, and we still import lots of chestnuts use over the Christmas period. And my job was to gather these in the autumn, keep them in sand and make chestnut stuffing. That was my job. Oh, getting very close to Christmas, and mash it up with butter and all sorts and some salt. And my mum was a brilliant cook, and you learnt to do all those things just as normal in the farmhouse kitchen.